Thank you both for coming. It's been it was hard enough for me and others who live in Madison to make it here today. I had to hitch a ride. I hope the microphone isn't on because it's probably against the law. But I got here in a truck. And I live about 10 minutes
away.
Did
you come over last night?
Yes, we both.
We both came last night.
Yeah, that was a good idea to do.
In between the two storms.
Yeah, good for you. Well, go home safely, too. All right.
We don't have everybody.
Just a minute, I know that. I can count. Mathematics is my strong point. We'll get everybody. We're also running with a law clerk serving as the marshal. So the marshal is out getting everybody. So please be seated, and we'll call the case in a few moments.
Yeah, they went to get the other justices, so hopefully they'll be here in a jiff.
Court's in good hands. Don't worry about a thing. I told the lawyers who preceded you that the court had a mistaken judgment of proceeding today. It was not necessary to increase the burdens on your clients or on you and your families, and I personally apologize for that call.
But
we hope our judgment today on the cases is better. How was the Milwaukee area? Because I come in on the highway too, and even though it was cleared, there's a good patch or patches of ice right throughout. So.
Jenny's my clerk.
Portions closed down in Milwaukee.
Oh, they are. I'd have had trouble because I only know to get to Milwaukee on the main road. I don't know how to use the streets for Milwaukee, which makes it a little difficult. And let's see how we're doing. We got seven, and we got an acting. Just be seated, please. That was a good try. All right.
Maybe I should stand up, Chief.
All right. You be seated, too.
Okay.
All right. We're ready now for the business of the court. Before we begin, usually at about 11 o'clock on the first Wednesday of the month, we have a testing of the fire alarm system. That did not occur today. So I don't know what the issues are, but if there should be a fire alarm, we'll all sit through until it's quiet because it's probably the testing. And if we hear otherwise, we'll evacuate. But I just didn't want anybody disturbed by that. Okay. I'll now call the second case, which is 09AP1714 MJ Investment Company versus Village of Germantown. Matthew R. Jelinchik, representing MJ Investment Company. You may proceed, counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Matt Jelinchik. I'm an attorney for MJ Investment Company. We are delighted, who is the petitioner appellant plaintiff. We are extremely delighted to be here today to discuss the issues presented in this case. While all appellant petitioners are certainly pleased to be before this court, we are especially excited, given this is our first hearing in any court on this case. This case presents numerous legal issues covering the entire spectrum of the special assessment process. MJ does not need a finding in its favor or even a ruling on all of these issues to succeed in this appeal. Instead, to succeed, MJ need only show that the 90-day appeal procedure and deadline found in 66.0703(12) should not apply. This case asks the court to evaluate the scope of this appeal procedure and limitation found in Chapter 66, When the special assessment is made without the authority to assess in the first place, if the special assessment levied is not the type that is contemplated by Chapter 66. It also invites an opportunity for the court to examine the sufficiency of the notice necessary if, in fact, the 90-day appeal limitation and procedure does apply.
Counsel, there was approximately $235,000 to $250,000 placed in escrow. Where's that money now?
Your Honor, that was placed in escrow. The developer who purchased the property was required to pay it to the village at the time of the development, which occurred within the last year. So that money in escrow had been liquidated to pay the special assessment with interest. It was roughly $158,000 in principal and nearly $50,000 in interest.
Okay, so if I hear you right, it was put in escrow until there was actual development. Is that right?
Yes, under the special assessment as levied, it was not due until the developer received approval for the development from
the village. And who put it up, the developer or MJ?
The money was posted by MJ out of its sale proceeds in that purchase transaction. Contemporaneous with that, MJ took an assignment of the right to challenge the special assessment from the developer. So it was absolutely MJ's money. It was their property interest. It was their sale proceeds that they were deprived of. There are three avenues in which MJ can succeed in this appeal. The first would be to, and each avenue is more broad than the following. The first is that the special assessment itself is void ab initio for lack of authority or power to assess. MJ argues this because the work was not a public work or improvement that could be recovered by special assessment. And specific to MJ's property, it was not abutting or adjacent the improvement. The next avenue would be within the special assessment statutes themselves. And MJ would offer that the special assessment in this instance was not contemplated by Chapter 66, the special assessment statutes. That being the special assessment was post-construction. And further, that the special assessment was contingent. Neither of these are contemplated by the express grant of authority in Chapter 66, so therefore the statute of limitations within that express grant of authority should not apply. The last, as we narrow down, goes to the actual 90-day appeal deadline and procedure. And MJ would offer arguments that the notice it received was insufficient to trigger that 90-day statute of limitations if found applicable, and also has asserted the fraud exception, which is in 66.070312 as an exception as to when that appeal limitation and procedure applies. This court may initially ask, what went wrong? With all the safeguards in the special assessment statutes and procedures, how could MJ's property over 200 feet away from this improvement be assessed? The simple answer to this is that instead of allowing the Director of Public Works to do his job and determine the special assessment area, which the statute charges as his responsibility, the village and Menard's attorneys, years before the development, negotiated the properties to be assessed, the amount that was going to be assessed, and the formula in which that assessment was going to be made. When I asked at deposition, and this is...
Let me interrupt and ask you a question that's been giving me some concern. You're saying, as I understand it, that the Chapter 66 provision should not apply, that what should be applied here is Section 893.72. Now, 893.72, as I understand it, normally has a one-year statute of limitations. How does that help you in this case? What date do you ask us to look at in regard to such a statute?
Justice Crooks, 893.72 doesn't only place a one-year limitation. It also has notable and very important exceptions that are critical to this case.
And you're tying into those exceptions then?
Yes, Your Honor. 893.72 states that there's a one-year statute of limitations for any challenge of a procedural defect or defect in the proceedings of the special assessment. It more or less cures any procedural defects. There's another type of defect, and that is the lack of power to assess in the first place. And Section 893.72 recognizes that as an exception, stating that the one-year statute of limitation does not apply when the property is not liable for the assessment or the municipality does not have the power to assess in the first place. So when the court tries to answer the question, what statute of limitations is more instructive here, particularly given the arguments that there was a lack of power to assess and that this assessment was not the type that Chapter 66 argued or that Chapter 66 contemplated, 893.72 is your answer. At the same time, MJ need not convince this court what statute of limitations apply to succeed. It need only show that the 90-day appeal limitation that has been applied to preclude its case does not, and that the claim can proceed.
Counselor, are you saying that there is no power to make this assessment because in order to have a special assessment, the village must first determine that the property will be benefited by the improvements that generated the special assessment? What's that power argument about?
No, Your Honor. The argument that there is no power to assess in the first instance has very little to do with any argument that MJ Property either was or was not benefited. If there is no power to assess in the first place, the rest of the analysis, including, you know, does the assessment reasonably relate to the benefit conferred, is really moot. The arguments that MJ offers on why the village did not have the power to specially assess is, one, that this was not a public work or improvement. The special assessment statute, first section, 66.0701A, states that the village may specially assess for any municipal work or improvement. That's meant to reimburse a municipality, not a private developer, for work that a private developer proceeds with. How do we know in this instance whether it was municipal work or improvement? Yes, it was street improvements. Yes, it was relocation of a lift station for a sewer system. But how do we know if it's municipal work or improvement? Number one, who's contracting out the work? In this case, it was not the village. It was Menards, a private developer. What better answer to whether it's municipal work and improvement than who is contracting out the work?
Well, you could also focus on the nature of what was going on here, and the nature of what was going on here sounds to me like it was a municipal improvement.
Well,
I mean,
Honor,
a sewer lift station, certainly Menards wanted it for the development that they were doing, but it certainly benefits folks in the way that a general municipal public work project does.
Well, it is public infrastructure. Is it a municipal work or improvement? If any municipality is bound, when any public work is over $25,000, to open it to bid and follow other public contracting protocol, including awarding to the lowest responsible bidder. That wasn't followed in this case. The Director of Public Works confirms it. So there is no way, whether it's public infrastructure or not, that there can be a conclusion that somehow this was a municipal work or improvement. If the developer wants to go out and help build the public infrastructure, that's its prerogative. But the municipality is not going to be able to call on its special assessment powers to reimburse the developer, particularly when the developer contracts for the work, does it themselves without publicly bidding it. Part of the public trust of the special assessment is that the property owners who are being assessed are getting the most responsible contractors and the best deal possible. And so this is a basic, implicit, inherent requirement for the municipality to specially assess. And it's in the first sentence of the special assessment statute, municipal work or improvement.
But look, counsel, with all due respect, you're trying to get out from 66.07032A, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the notice you got in, what, July of 2004, didn't it tell you that the municipality was operating under 660703 special assessments?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So your client knew that the municipality alleged or stated that it was working under special assessments. Now, 12A says, a person having an interest in a parcel of land affected by a determination of the governing body under 8C, 10, or 11, right?
Yes.
Does it come under any of that?
No, and that goes to...
Okay. You're saying it doesn't. The county says, I'm sorry, the municipality says it does. Well, that's a determination of the governing body, and so a person having an interest in land may, within 90 days after the date of notice or the publication of the final resolution under 8D, appeal the determination to the circuit court of the county in which the property is located. So you say they didn't have the power. They say they do. A question for the court will be whether they have the power. But it seems to me the statute right on its face says you have 90 days to appeal.
Your Honor, I understand how clear and strict the 90-day appeal deadline appears.
Right.
There is case law regarding reassessment statutes. The reassessment statute says if a special assessment is void for any reason, equally broad, equally permissive, as the 90-day appeal limitation is strict, if it's void for any reason, the municipality can reassess. There's a long line of cases starting with Shinkton where the Supreme Court said that power to reassess does not extend to where the municipality does not have the power to assess in the first place. So I think likewise, the reading of another part of Chapter 66 with regard to the notice of appeal, again, it cannot extend to cure or create power to assess where none existed in the first
place. That's not what subsection E says. Subsection E says an appeal under this subsection, which includes everything in 12, is the sole remedy of any person aggrieved by the determination of the governing body. Then it says whether the appointment was made according to plans, and that the appeal shall raise any question of law or fact stated in the notice of appeal involving the making of the improvement, the assessment of benefits, or the award of damages, or the levy. And then it says the limitation in paragraph A, which is the 90 days, does not apply to appeals based on fraud or latent defects in the construction. So it says it goes to everything of fact or law, and then it pulls back and says not fraud, not latent defects. So there's no latent defect here, is there?
In the construction, no.
No. So you do argue fraud, but that's a pretty tough one your pleading and facts. But there's no exception for lack of authority.
And, Your Honor, I direct you again to the reassessment statute, which says the municipality can reassess if void for any reason. Any reason, Your Honor, which under your comments might include lack of power to assess, might include any question of law as the 90-day appeal limitation.
Why would the reassessment statute be applicable here? We're talking about a special assessment, are we not?
A reassessment of a void special assessment. That statute has been discussed, unlike this 90-day limitation, with respect to when the municipality does not have the power to assess in the first place. And the Supreme Court in Shinkton said
But now you're saying that the reason that there was no authority to assess was that this was not public improvement?
It was not a municipal worker improvement subject to reimbursement to the village through special assessment.
Wasn't there an intersection involved here, Appleton Avenue and another cross street that were being improved as part of this?
It was all public infrastructure work that was specially assessed, but Menards, a private developer, contracted the work, did not follow contract protocol for public projects, and so it is not a municipal worker improvement. It's public infrastructure, but those are two different things. Now, there's another reason why we argue that as to MJ's property, it could not the village did not have the power to assess, and that's because MJ's property was over 200 feet away from these improvements. MJ's property at all times had a four-lane road of Appleton Avenue abutting its property. No improvements were made anywhere near the MJ property. When I asked the director of Public Works why MJ's property was included in the special assessment, he said he had no idea. We speculate it was the result of a mistaken site map that Menards engineers put together that showed County Line Road collinear with the Menards property line and really where the terminus of the construction was. But County Line Road in reality is 500 feet away. And these are the dangers of when you have a village and a private developer years before contracting what the special assessment area is going to be, what the benefits are, what the amount is going to be charged, because the village more or less contracts away its discretion to fix the mistake. It's facing a breach of contract claim if it doesn't, if it goes and reassesses or adjusts or reopens to fix the error. And that's what happened here. The director of public works said his special assessment area was not based on his independent judgment. He just took the exhibit from the development agreement and felt he was bound by it. When the village board looked to approve these special assessments, they had some reluctance. And the village attorney reminded them, you signed a development agreement with Menards 5 years ago. These are the properties we have to specially assess. Now, case law establishes that the power to assess for a municipality only extends to properties that are abutting and adjacent. If the property is not abutting or adjacent, there is no authority to assess. A village cannot assess a property across town for improvements to a road that it does not abut or is not adjacent to.
Council, explain to me why you think 89372 trumps 12E, when 12E, and I'm talking about, of course, 660703, 12E, when 12E says it is the sole remedy and that you are to raise any questions of law or facts.
Justice Riley, I would direct you first to 12A. And 12A says an appeal of a final determination under 8C, 10, or 11. Mm-hmm. 8C is a final determination directing the work to be carried out and paid for. And that is pre-construction, a final resolution pre-construction that this work be carried out and paid for. In this instance, all the work was completed before the resolution was passed. It was all paid for by Menards before the resolution was passed. So this is not a final resolution under 8C. Now, constitutionally, the courts have found that post-construction assessments are not prohibited. At the same time, it is not within the purview of sub 8C, and Park Avenue Mequon case, the Court of Appeals specifically stated that post-construction special assessments are not expressly granted, or the authority to do so is not expressly granted by the legislature in Chapter 66. So if it's not expressly authorized in Chapter 66, how can the statute of limitations in Chapter 66 apply to it? There's another reason why...
If we follow that argument, counsel, then every single objection to the municipality's determination avoids the 90-day limit, because all that happens is council says, hey, it's illegal under 66, whatever, and therefore we're not covered by 90 days. But that's the whole point of E. It says everything's covered. So even if they put snow blowing as a special assessment and they put it under 8C, I think you've got the obligation to appeal within 90 days, as long as you got the notice, because what you're doing is fighting with them about the powers.
And Your Honor, what I would offer is there is a difference between a defect in the proceedings that deny the jurisdiction to assess, which is cured by the 90-day appeal limitation. But if the municipality did not have the authority to do it in the first place, then the 90-day appeal limitation or any limitation should not apply for the reason that it's not a special assessment. It's a special assessment in name only. And we do not argue that there were defects in the proceedings. We argue there was a lack of authority to assess in the first instance, and we also argue that this special assessment was not the kind contemplated by 66, so you cannot extend the statute of limitations to those type of special assessments. Going along those lines, this was also a contingent special assessment. The notice said, if you develop your property in the next 10 years, then you will have to pay the special assessment. These, Chapter 66 does not in any way contemplate or permit contingent special assessments. They can be...
Just stop just a minute there. That was one of your arguments that I found. I found this case fascinating, but that was one that I thought was very interesting. And what occurred to me is, if this is a contingent special assessment, it may come due, as it did here when development occurred, or it may never come due if you get out, 12 years or something, then it doesn't come due. Well, could you argue that when it came due, which is at the development, that at that point in time, you had 90 days from then to make your argument?
Your Honor, that would be the first time that MJ, when it became due, was deprived an interest in his property. And so the estate of Wolf case says that a notice has to sufficiently inform the property owner what he must do to avoid a deprivation of interest in his property. And when receiving a contingent notice like that, the property owner doesn't know whether his interest in property has been deprived.
Well, how does your claim fit around the date on which development occurred? Are you within 90 days of that when you filed the lawsuit?
Yes, the appeal was filed within 90 days. This appeal was pending with the Court of Appeals or possibly on review to the Supreme Court when the special assessment actually became due.
But too early.
There are cases involving premature appeals of special assessments that have been read consistent with other types of appeals which would be timely. But if that's the analysis, that it would have been due and therefore appealable on that instance, then we're timely. Now, there's a bigger problem with the contingent nature in that it forces a property owner to speculate what's going to happen in the next 10 years, weighed against filing a lawsuit against the village in 90 days.
Yeah, I did some extra research, and I couldn't find any other state law on contingent special assessments, and maybe they just don't use that term. Did you find anything about it?
There are two ways to look at this special assessment, Justice Rogenczak. One is the special assessment statutes themselves say it can be deferred, but it cannot be deferred past the time the improvements are put to use. This was a street improvement, so they were put to use the day they were opened. So it was not capable of being deferred. There's also statutes that allow it to be paid in installments, but it has to be, the first payment needs to be made the first date in which it is due. If deferred, the first date it's put to use. Now, there's another way to look at this contingent special assessment. What it may be is an automatic, self-executing reassessment without notice, hearing, or appeal rights. And my point there is, if the village down the road decided MJ's property was benefited because they've redeveloped the property, they could reassess or reopen the assessment at that time. But if they did that, they'd have to set it for notice, set it for hearing, and the 90-day appeal period would run then. So this is either a contingent special assessment that does not give fair notice and is not contemplated by Chapter 66, or it is a springing, self-executing reassessment with no municipal procedure, opportunity for notice, hearing, or appeal. In either instance, it's a violation of due process. This is a special assessment in name only.
Could I ask you, counsel, I think you talked about the Director of Public Works at least discussing the relationship between Germantown and Menards, and an initial agreement had to do with the property to be assessed, the amount to be assessed, and then there was something else.
And if I may, my red light's on. Continue.
May, counsel.
Thank you. The formula in how the properties were going to be assessed, meaning proportional front footage. All aspects of the special assessment procedure, which are really supposed to be fulfilled through a process by officials who are charged with the duty, but this was all hardwired by a contract years before. And that's the real danger here. And there may be a way to do this that the municipality would be able to specially assess, but this is not the way.
Well, my real question is this. In the phrase amount to be assessed, did they settle at the time of these negotiations on the amount that was to be assessed against MJ?
The amount of the total assessment, Justice Prosser, was the amount that Menards had to pay for the road improvement. That was a one-page document provided to the village. The village adopted every dime. The properties that were assessed were to linear foot, which is a customary way of assessing for
what I'm really trying to get at is at this time or at any other time when the notice came through, for example, July something or other, did MJ know or could it have known precisely what was being assessed until they got a bill?
It did receive a notice, and the notice would have showed the amount that its principal assessment would be collecting interest. But it didn't know whether it would ever have to pay it or if it would ever become due. So to try to divide whether you were specially assessed from whether you're going to have to pay it is a fallacy. A special assessment is a collection. That's all it is. Some kind of academic analysis as to whether your property has been specially assessed really isn't germane unless you actually have to pay it.
Has the property been developed?
It has now. The property was sold to a developer. The restaurant is gone. It's now a typical retail development.
Are there any further questions? Hearing none, thank you, Council. Amy J. Doyle, representing the Village of Germantown.
Thank you, Your Honor, members of the court, Council. My name is Amy Doyle, and I represent the Village of Germantown in this case. This case involves a special assessment on property owned by MJ arising out of the reconstruction of Appleton Avenue. This resulted in special improvements with respect to the traffic flow, the turning lanes, and increased property values for properties located along that area. The special assessment that was done by the Village of Germantown was completed in June of 2004. Approximately 4 years later, MJ filed its appeal, objecting to the special assessments in this case. The appeal that was filed was pursuant to Section 660703.12, which provides that any appeal objecting to special assessments must be made within 90 days.
When you say that it was pursuant to that, is there a recitation in the appeal that they're utilizing that provision?
That's correct. The 90-day time period under Paren 12 has been interpreted as a statute of limitations, which means if you fail to file, you lose your right to appeal. Compliance with these 90-day statute of limitations has been strictly enforced by all of the decisions that have looked at the issue. The purpose of enforcing the 90-day time period is to ensure consistency and uniformity when you look at a special assessment. It's to prevent the very issue that's before this court, which now the Village of Germantown, almost 10 years later, will have to defend if this case is reversed, the question of the special assessment that was done and completed in 2004.
Could I ask you, when did the 90 days, in your view, begin to run?
It's my position that the 90 days begins to run after notice, and that would be either publication of the final resolution, which would be June 30th, 2004, or possibly it would be 2 weeks later is when notice was sent to the actual property owner. And in the record, that would have been July 12th of 2004. Now, the three issues that I understand MJ is making and this court has requested us to discuss are, number one, whether this is a contingent special assessment. And according to MJ, if it is, it's not allowed under the statutes. And if it's not allowed, the 90-day time period should not apply. The second issue is whether the village should get the benefit of those 90 days if it completed the special assessment after the work had already been completed. And the third issue, which was already touched on, I know, is whether MJ has the option of pursuing this appeal through a different statute, whether they had other alternatives besides the 90-day time period in which to pursue their appeal.
Could I ask this? The contention is made that there is no benefit to this particular property from everything that was done. It was not abutting. There was no benefit. It's quite a distance away. Did the village get complaints from MJ before, let's say, July 12, 2004?
This is one of the problems. You know, the only issue that was really addressed by the courts was the statute of limitations. But my understanding, you know, based on the records, and I was not involved during the actual assessment period, is that the benefit was improved traffic flow, increased property values. There were turning lanes in that area which would allow for, you know, better traffic flow. Which would potentially allow for increased traffic to their actual business. While the issue of the special benefits was not addressed, that is the information that was contained in the Director of Public Works report that was filed during the assessment period in this case.
So the question about whether something abuts, an abutting requirement, how do you address that?
I don't think that there's any requirement that a specific improvement has to abut your property, because other cases have determined that increased traffic flow, while the actual construction may not be directly in front of your business. You know, my understanding is that this was very close to. I would not agree that it was over 500 feet away. But there were, in addition, turning lanes that were very close to, if not adjacent to their property, that would increase their property values and allow for better traffic flow. So I would disagree that it has to be adjacent or immediately in front of your property. Now, the first issue is the question of whether the assessment that was done by the Village of Germantown amounted to a contingent special assessment. And again, according to MJ, this is not permitted under the statutes, and therefore the 90-day time period should not apply. There is nothing contingent about what occurred in this case. I think it's important for this court to understand there is a big difference between whether an assessment was made and the issue of payment. The only contingent aspect of this assessment was the issue of payment, which is completely different from whether MJ was specially assessed for special benefits it received. And I think this is very important in this case because the time period, the 90-day statute of limitations, does not begin to run until the final resolution is adopted. There is no provision, and I don't even think there's a contention, that the 90-day time period should begin to run when payment is received. And the statutes are pretty clear, and the case law that has interpreted that they specifically say, and this is in the Maya case, the 90-day period does not commence until the district publishes its final resolution or mails notice of the final resolution to interested parties. This has nothing to do with when payment has to be made. The only time period that is significant with respect to the statute of limitations is when the assessment was finalized. And Section 8E provides that assessments are legally authorized and made when the final assessment is published. So we have to distinguish between when an assessment is made, and in this case, there was an assessment done. There was a notice, there was a public hearing, there was a final resolution that was adopted, and this information was sent to MJ. That is when the assessment is complete, and that is when the statute of limitations starts to run. Though I know there's some question about deferred special assessments or installment special assessments, but those provisions do not provide for any different statute of limitations. You know, it doesn't say, well, if you can pay within a year, you then have 90 days from that time period to file an appeal. And that would not make sense.
The original property was a restaurant?
Yes, that's correct.
A popular restaurant?
I would say, you know, it's been in existence for, I would say, 60 years at least.
And the benefit to that property was increased traffic flow.
Yes. I think that was one of the benefits.
Okay.
And I think there are other benefits like curbs, you know, those type of things. So I don't want to just limit it to increased or improved traffic flow.
Well, the increased traffic flow arguably increased the value of the property.
That's correct.
All right. But as I understand it, if they had sold it to another restaurant owner, would there have been an assessment?
I do not believe that there would have been an assessment because I believe under the final resolution it was developed or redeveloped. So I think that would be a question on whether it amounted to a redevelopment of the property. In this situation, the restaurant was completely torn down. If someone else came in and used it as is without any improvements, I guess that may be a different situation, but I think that would be a question of fact as to whether it was redeveloped.
Did the owners of the property intend to sell it at the time they received the, say, July 12, 2004 assessment?
That I don't know.
What if they didn't intend to sell it? I mean, it's July 12, 2004. That's the latest date that you argue. And they got 90 days. Do they know exactly what the assessment is at that point?
Yes. They know what the amount was. They know that they were specially assessed that amount. And they also knew that the terms that they would not have to pay if they did not develop or redevelop that property within, I believe it was 10 years from the development contract. So they knew and understood those terms.
So you wanted them to go to court within those 90 days, even if they didn't intend to sell. Is that right?
Right. I mean, this is a strange situation, but yes, if they did not agree with the special assessment or believe that they received special benefits from this improvement under the statute, they had to file an appeal within 90 days. And in this case, there's no dispute that they received that notice and that information.
What if they thought that the village didn't have the power to impose that assessment?
Again, it's my position that they had the obligation to file an appeal within 90 days if they felt that the assessment was improper for whatever reason, whether it's special benefits or whether they felt that the city or, excuse me, the village did not have the power to specially assess the property. And I think it also could include the terms, you know, whatever terms there were. But I think the point in this case is that once an assessment is made, under the statute, you have 90 days to commence an appeal. And that was not done in this case. The fact that they may not have to pay, I don't think really plays into this. I mean, this type of thing happens all the time, whether it's through development agreements or whether it's just a municipality saying, I know you receive special benefits, but we're not going to make you pay unless you do something different with your property. So this happens all the time. And if MJ believed that it did not receive special benefits or that the village did not have the jurisdiction or the power to assess or for whatever reason, the statute is very clear that you have 90 days to file an appeal. And that was not done in this case.
Suppose the property had been sold to a developer, but the developer didn't do anything until 2012. Would there have been an assessment?
There may not have been. And it's hard to answer that because, you know, the words are developed or redeveloped. So if he did not do anything, I guess potentially, they would not have been assessed because in this case, the payment was not actually made until they applied for or received a building permit. So it was not until they actually were building the new construction on the property. The second issue that was raised is whether the village has the right to, I guess, claim the 90 days if it completed the assessment after the work has already been completed. Again, you know, this issue has been addressed, and I know it was the Court of Appeals in the City of Mequon case. Again, this is some type of thing that happens all the time. There are many circumstances where there are development agreements or whether in the City of Mequon case, the Department of Transportation was the one that actually fronted the money, organized the work, and actually provided that information to the City of Mequon. The City of Mequon then used those figures and specially assessed the property owners. There's nothing wrong with what occurred there or what occurred here. Simply because the costs were fronted by a third party does not mean that there weren't any special benefits received or that the special assessment process was incorrect or incomplete. And I know, again, you know, there are certain requirements under the statutes, and there's nothing in the statute that requires anything to happen first, second, or third. You know, under the statute, there must be a preliminary resolution. So obviously, that would have to happen first. There's also a requirement for filing a public director report. The most important thing is that there is notice and the opportunity to be heard by the property owner. That is what is the driving force behind this statute, that a property owner has the right to be heard with respect to the amount of the assessment. And I think it's important to understand that the property owner does not have the right to be heard before the work is completed or to be heard with respect to the nature of the development. And that was, you know, specifically addressed in the Ditburner case, where the court said the property owner has the right to be heard with respect to the assessment. He does not have the right to be heard with respect to whether he agrees with the work before it is done. And I think that plays into the fact of whether there is any requirement for the municipality to do the special assessment before the work is done. And also the fact that under the statutes, municipalities are giving are given a broad range of authority to reassess. So if there is any defect in the process, let's say there's a defect in the notice, they have the right to reassess the property. And, of course, that would have been done after the work is completed. You know, if they have the right to reassess after the work under that statute, it doesn't make sense for them not to have the right, you know, to reassess in the first instance. The final issue is whether there are any available alternatives to the statute of limitations under Section 12. According to MJ, it had other alternatives that it could pursue in order to avoid the 90-day statute of limitations. This issue has been addressed by several courts, which found that Section 12 is the sole remedy for any party that is wishing to, you know, file an objection for a special assessment under that section. And I know the issue of Chapter 89372 came up, and this court has already addressed that issue in the Borneman case. The same argument that MJ is making in this case was made in that case, you know, several years ago, where the plaintiff claimed that, you know, the statute of limitations under, well, at that time it was Section 330.24, should apply as opposed to the 90 days under the special assessment statute. And the court specifically distinguished those two and said, given what occurred, that there was a final resolution, that was a special assessment under, I think it was 6660 at the time, and the plaintiff could not use the statute of limitations under 89372. And if there are no more questions.
Any questions, Dave Prosser?
6607.03.12. Are there any exceptions to that 90 days?
There is one exception for fraud or defects in the construction.
And if the municipality hypothetically didn't have the authority to impose the assessment?
I guess it really depends on what you're talking about, did not have the authority. I believe section or subsection 12 is pretty clear that it includes all types of claims. It includes claims on, you know, the legal or the factual. So I would think that that would be encompassed, because I know that once an appeal is made, you know, that is one of the issues that is evaluated, you know, including, you know, special benefits, whether it's adjacent, you know, all of those issues are evaluated once a timely claim is made. It's my understanding that the only real exception is for fraud or defects in the construction. And I don't believe that that is the situation here.
What about the bid process that opposing counsel talked about?
Now, I'm sorry?
What about the bid process that opposing counsel?
Okay. It's my position that, you know, the fact that Menards did front the money, did do the construction, that may be something that they could raise if a timely appeal is made. But I don't believe that that is something that allows them to circumvent the 90 days. If they believe that the bid process should have been pursued, that is something that it is addressed once a timely appeal is made. And again, it's my position that this is something that happens all the time. You know, in the Park Avenue case, it's something that the Department of Transportation, again, organized it. The municipality did not. You know, so that claim could have been made in that case. But I believe that those are issues that are discussed and evaluated once a timely appeal is made. And in this case, I don't believe there was one. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Let me just ask you one question before you sit down. When I read the allegations of fraud that are set forth by MJ here, they seem to be a number of the things that have already been discussed. But I'm a little concerned. What is your response to the fraud allegations? Have they been established in some way? Do they have to be established in some way to get into that exception?
Unfortunately, in this case, they have not been established because the only issue that the circuit court looked at was the statute of limitations. And just based on their allegations, it's my position that those type of claims are really their disagreement with how the special assessment occurred. You know, the fact that they didn't get special benefits or that they weren't adjacent or that the report wasn't proper. Those type of issues, in my opinion, don't amount to fraud, but rather would be evaluated during an appeal under subsection 12.
Counsel, should this case be remanded since the circuit court determined only on the statute of limitations and giving your opposing counsel an opportunity to further develop the allegations of fraud before the circuit court?
I would say no.
I think that was your right answer, but then if you could explain
and
why.
I think it's interesting that their complaint, you know, was filed pursuant to subsection 12, which provides for the 90-day statute of limitations. There weren't any allegations that we could not file within these 90 days because of fraud. You know, there's no allegations that
Where is the allegation of fraud in there? I'm looking at the five causes of action.
There is no allegation of fraud.
Okay. I just wondered if I was on the wrong notice of appeal and complaint or
no,
something.
No. There is no allegation of fraud. They did raise the issue of fraud, you know, very cursory in at the circuit court level and then raised it to more extensively before the Court of Appeals and before this court. But there really was not an argument, even before the circuit court, hey, we discovered this fraud, that's why we couldn't, you know, file this within the 90 days. Rather, different arguments were made, and this has just become more of an issue as time has gone on.
Let me follow through with that a little bit. When I look at Section 12E, 12E talks about, as I think the Chief Justice talked about earlier, an appeal under this subsection is the sole remedy of any person aggrieved by a determination of the governing body, whether or not the improvement was made according to plans and specifications, and shall raise any question of law or fact stated in the notice of appeal involving the making of the improvement, the assessment of benefits, or the award of damages, or the levy of any special assessment. Now, is it basically your position that when they start detailing what they claim is fraud, that those things are covered by 12E? In other words, when I look at the allegations of fraud here, it seems to me that they're basically procedural in nature, that they're talking about, well, what I've got in a memo that was given to me are the following things. It did not do its own assessment. The former director of public works stated he had no idea why MJ's property was included. Germantown did not receive any bids. It included properties that were not adjacent to or abutting the improvements. The director of public works did not undertake his own investigation. Money collected through these special assessments were paid to Menards. Are those the kind of allegations of fraud that you think are covered by 12E?
Yes. I mean, my position is that their allegations of fraud are those type of things that are evaluated if a timely appeal is made. They're not the type of, I guess, fraud that would allow a party to forego or circumvent the 90-day time period. You know, whether there were any improvements, whether, you know, they were adjacent, the issue of the bids are all part of their allegation, you know, that this special assessment was improperly done. But those are the issues that are evaluated once a timely appeal is made.
Any other questions? Thank you. You may be seated. Mr. Jelinek.
Thank you. I wanted to address a couple questions that I heard in the response. Justice Crooks, you asked whether the pleadings themselves was simply a notice of appeal under 66.070312. That is one of the pleadings that were filed to initiate this action. There was also a summons and complaint. It was filed as one document. It was titled Notice of Appeal Pursuant to 66.070312 and Complaint. A separate summons was also filed with that. An appeal under Chapter 66 is started by filing the Notice of Appeal with the Circuit Court and then serving it on the Village. The Village compiles a record, much like a writ of cert review.
Are there any allegations of fraud in that complaint? I just wonder, is that what you have at Petitioner's Appendix starting at 009?
Sure. Justice Ziegler, there are two issues I would count on that. First, the Mayek v. Cloverleaf case says that a notice of appeal does not need to contain any allegations. It's just, hey, here's notice, I'm appealing. And that's all it needs to say to start the
action. There's also a complaint. So you allege five causes of action.
Yes. The complaint, with respect to slander of title, makes an allegation that the special assessment and its levy is a sham, sham, false, and frivolous. And that would be in
paragraph 31.
Yes, was the allegation that we think now.
What facts were put in to the complaint to show that? I thought you had to that where you allege fraud. Just alleging it is not enough.
With respect to a complaint, perhaps, with respect to a notice of appeal. And mind you, the statute of limitations relates to a notice of appeal based on fraud.
But a complaint, what facts did you allege of fraud?
The evidence of the fraud are the procedural failures and the lack of the village to actually endeavor what the statute charges it to do. The notice of assessment itself is full of frauds. It says a contract was let by the village to do the work. That's not the case. It also says that the improvements extended to County Line Road. They stopped 500 feet from County Line Road. It also said that assessment was related to some kind of public improvement or work to recover some expense that had already been incurred. That was not the case.
Well, Counselor, mistakes of fact, and I understand your position that these are not accurate statements of fact, are generally not sufficient for fraud because you've got to show also an intent to mislead by what's being said, and I didn't see that you made any allegations that the village misstated facts if they were misstated in an effort to mislead MJ.
If that's the case, Your Honor, I did request at the time of the motion to dismiss leave to amend to include those allegations as part of my response arguments to the motion to dismiss. The case was dismissed without hearing. If we got to go back to alleged fraud, you know, we can start a new lawsuit. We can ask for leave based on the findings of this Supreme Court to do that. So now with respect to other issues that were discussed, the scope of the improvement, just so the court understands, MJ's property was 200 feet from the improvement. County Line Road was 500 feet away. And that's what was described as the area that was improved, and it simply was not the case. The Department of Director of Public Works confirmed that the improvement did not extend to MJ's property. With respect to the specific benefits, the traffic study included a study of this intersection that's very far away from the MJ property that was going to be reconstructed with turning lanes and signals. It was actually going to be a alternate route around the County Line Road Appleton Avenue intersection from where MJ's property is located. So even their own traffic study showed this was going to divert traffic away from the MJ property. Justice Prosser, with respect to whether MJ had the intent to sell the property at the time they received the notice, I can tell you they did not. Mark and John Lohman ran their father's restaurant. Mark was the manager. John was the chef. In 2005, after this notice would have been received, John died of cancer. Mark was left with the family business on his own. He tried to run this restaurant. He couldn't. He had to retire. It was too much of a strain on him physically and mentally. He had to retire. Now he doesn't have any income any longer. So what does he need to do to support for himself and support for John's widow? He needs to sell the property. Sometimes life makes decisions for us. And so any belief that somehow MJ chose to sell this property and made some calculated decision for this that this assessment would be due is not the reality of what property owners face when they receive this type of contingent assessment. Thank you, Your Honor.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Jelinek, and thank you, Ms. Doyle, for your excellent arguments today on an issue we haven't had before directly. And we want to thank you again for making the effort to come under hazardous conditions. And we hope you leave and have a safe travels home. With that, we conclude our argument in 09-AP-1714, MJ Investment Company versus Bridge of Germantown. The court will have a recess until 1:30, and you may leave or not leave Madison as you see fit. Pardon me? Okay, would you keep me advised about that? The court's in recess until 1:30 when we'll hear our third case of the day.
Well, it's good we were spared the fire alarm.